the College Try podcast every week. Typically every Tuesday. I've kind of broadened that a bit because, it's not Tuesday. It's Wednesday. And we'll get into the details on that and how the scheduling format will kind of shift a little bit as the season progresses. We'll get on all that in just a moment. But for starters, you're listening to the College Try podcast. Every week, I'm your host, Austin Price. As always, I shouldn't sound too different at this point, but if I do, I apologize. Coming off a bit of a cold. Luckily, my voice has not completely given out on me, so we're holding up. All right. And just want to let you know, of course, this podcast brought to you by ESPN Pensacola. As always, you can listen to us on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, and on our ESPN Pensacola mobile app. And you can find the College Try podcast on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. Alrighty, so I said I would touch on the scheduling format. We will touch on that now. Typically, we do this show on Tuesdays, and I said last Tuesday that we would do this week's on Monday. And I said that because of the election that happened last night. But then I decided to change my mind last moment because the election, of course, is very important on that Tuesday, but something else that's important, and in at least in my life, more important, is the college football playoff rankings. The first installment of them came out on Tuesday, so I'm like, you know what? Since I can't do the show on Tuesday anyway because I was doing election coverage on our sister station, News Radio 92.3, I will just put it off another day, put it off until Wednesday, and we will have all the freedom in the world to cover those rankings, and the world will be our oyster. So as far as going forward, I'm probably going to do it on Wednesdays now every week. College Try podcast will be on Wednesday nights instead of Tuesday nights because the college football playoff rankings is what matters now, and we react to those weekly, and they come out on Tuesdays, not Sundays like the AP poll. We may do a Monday edition right after Selection Sunday, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, along with any other schedule changes. Without further ado, let's get right into our normal scheduling here, starting with reacting to the rankings. Alrighty, so looking at the CFP Top 25, since this is the first installment of these rankings all season, I'm going to go through the Top 25 in their entirety just very quickly here, starting with number one, Oregon, number two, Ohio State, number three, Georgia. That's already a shift that's noteworthy to people. Number four, Miami, number five, Texas, six, Penn State, seven, Tennessee, eight, Indiana, nine, BYU, 10, Notre Dame. So there's your top 10, followed by Alabama at number 11, Boise State at number 12, SMU at number 13, Texas A&M at number 14, followed by 15, LSU, 16, Ole Miss, 17, Iowa State, 18, Pittsburgh, 19, Kansas State, and 20, Colorado. And then to round out, we have number 21, Washington State, 22, Louisville, 23, Clemson, 24, Missouri, and 25, Army. Whew. Alrighty. Luckily, I just used all my breath on that top 25, so I'm happy to tell you, or at least tell myself, that I don't have much to critique about this top 25. I think for the most part, they did very well with these rankings. And the main reason for that is because I noticed that they being the committee, are establishing a far heavier prioritization of head-to-head results than the AP voters have. If you don't know what I mean by this, this is evident in multiple instances throughout those rankings. Texas A&M is ahead of LSU. LSU is ahead of Ole Miss. Kansas State is ahead of Colorado. And Louisville is ahead of Clemson. That's the biggest one. These teams all beat the other, and as a result, they are above the other. You would think this would kind of be expected, but in the AP poll, LSU's ahead of Texas A&M. Their double-digit loss to the Aggies doesn't matter. Kansas State beat Colorado, but Colorado's one spot ahead of them in the polls, according to AP voters. And Clemson is still several spots ahead of Louisville after Louisville went into Death Valley and beat the snot out of the Tigers. But the committee is saying, you know what? No, we are going to keep our standard of holding teams accountable for losing these games and rewarding you for winning them. I love that. I think that's awesome. Because I think it's ridiculous when I see the AP poll do that. knocking LSU beneath A&M. Knocking A&M beneath LSU. I think that's so stupid. I think that's ridiculous. I think it is so dumb for K-State. I think they went on the road to Boulder and beat the Buffaloes. And they're still half a game better than the Buffaloes. It's the same thing with A&M and LSU. A&M is half a game above LSU right now in overall record. And they're still behind. It's stupid. I'm glad to see the committee think so too. Also, the committee is clearly making a bigger deal out of quality of resume and quality of loss. This is where the Ohio State-Georgia thing comes in. The only shift into top 13 was Ohio State taking the number two spot over Georgia. If I had to guess, this falls on OSU's loss to Oregon looking better than Georgia's to Alabama. And Georgia has struggled on multiple occasions in games that they've won. Ohio State, they struggled with Nebraska recently. And if you want to give them grief for struggling at Penn State, go right ahead. But they haven't really struggled with some of their weaker opponents. It's okay to struggle if you're allowed to, if you are expected to. For example, if Georgia had to squeak past Texas, that's no problem. You were on the road and they're supposed to be a contender. It's the same thing with Ohio State and Penn State. But for you to be down 28-0 at one point to Alabama, a team that you are supposed to be better than on paper and by coaching, and they're not even in the top 10 today, we're going to hold that against you. It's not just that you lost, it's that you lost ugly. Sure, you beat Mississippi State by double digits, but you only won by 10, 41-31. You gave up a lot of points, too. That's a one-win team today. Excuse me, two-win team. They beat UMass. Congratulations. But you get my point. That's a team that is yet to beat a Power 4 opponent. And they're scoring 31 on you, and you can't. As a title contender, you can't beat them by over 10 points. That is intimidating. That is concerning. Don't even get me started on Kentucky, who you only beat by 1 point, and that clearly means less now. We thought Kentucky, oh, they're just a tricky team. No, Kentucky's actually having a down year. They were barely positive these past couple seasons, and they are making those years look good right now. So Georgia's looking all the weaker, and the committee is holding them accountable for that. If Ohio State starts struggling, we may see Georgia jump them. But if Ohio State keeps rolling and they get another quality win or two and Georgia keeps limping to the finish line against teams that they should be railroading, then I've got no problem with Georgia being third. I think that is the committee holding what is supposed to be the best conference to the highest standard. That is how it should be. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. I am all for acknowledging, conceding that the SEC is the best conference. I do not condone, however, giving them a pass. Oh my goodness, my voice just gave out there. Giving them a pass for failure. I do not condone that. I don't condone giving them a pass for, oh yeah, I struggled in this game and that game and those teams are terrible, but hey, I'm in the SEC. No, I do not buy that. I am glad to see that the committee, at least right now, doesn't seem to buy that either. Another spot where this whole thing about quality of resume and losses, another spot where that shined was the Clemson drop. They are weighing Clemson's hollow dominance, beating teams that you're supposed to beat, and their absolute collapsing against Georgia and Louisville, and they're using that to justify the drop all the way down to, where were they ranked again? 23rd. Dropped them all the way down there as a two-loss team, and they've got Louisville ahead of them. That's their way of saying, listen, man, especially when you play in the ACC, you can't be giving me that. You can't be giving me weak resumes and then just complete dumpster fires. Forget losing. Complete dumpster fires the minute you face a decent team. The two best teams they have faced all season are Georgia and Louisville. And you got beat up in both games. You got to make an example out of Clemson. You have to tell them you're not a contender. You've proven that, and you're going to be treated as such. And that is what they did. Lastly, 8-0 Army. This is kind of where the strength of resume thing kind of hurts fans to hear. Army's 25th. They're 18th in the AP poll. That is one thing a lot of people would probably prefer as far as how the AP handles it. And that is they kind of give the little guys a bit more love. When we start talking about quality of resume and stuff, this is a sobering reminder. The committee's not going to give the little guy a high ranking just because he's got a good record or just because he's a good story. It's just not going to happen. So the AP can put him as high as they want, but when it comes to the College Football Playoff Committee, unless Army beats Notre Dame, they're probably not going to get very high. And that is probably that hesitance surrounding the Black Knights is probably fueled by how Navy looked against Notre Dame. Navy was getting all that love too. Navy was getting all that love as, oh, they're looking so hot. They're just dominating everybody. They touched Notre Dame. They looked at the Irish funny and they got ran off the field. A neutral field, might I add. Sorry. That is just going to remind the playoff committee every time. We should not give these guys a platform until we know they've earned it. I think that's how they're looking at Army. And if Army beats Notre Dame, hey, they'll give you that love that you deserve. Also, just some other things I wanted to touch on. And these don't really have to do with the rankings. The rest of the rankings were fine. Good enough, in my opinion. I want to talk about James Franklin and Penn State. I do not see how you justify James Franklin being your coach for another season. I don't see it. Oh, but Austin, they're still sixth in the country. They played Ohio State tough. In this 12-team bracket, they're probably going to make the, you know, in this 12-team bracket era, they're probably going to make the playoff and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Did you know that Ryan Day has got to have one of the fieriest behinds in college football today? Because he can't show up. He can't get Ohio State, a team with a great standard, over the hump. He's a good coach at a great program, and people are calling for his head in the streets of Columbus as we live and breathe. And that guy went into Happy Valley and shut down Penn State. That guy with his Buckeyes went into Penn State and won. This was supposed to be James's year. The bracket is bigger. Ryan Day's on the road. Jim Harbaugh's out of the picture. And Michigan has clearly collapsed as a result. This is your year, James. What do you got? You get shut down by Ohio State on your own turf. Penn State is another one of those schools with a great standard. And James Franklin is just another good coach. Let me just go ahead and blueprint the rest of the season for Penn State football. You ready? They are going to win out, or they may lose to someone like Minnesota. Minnesota's looking decent right now. You may trip up on them. You're going to finish as a 10-win team, and you may stumble into the playoff. You're definitely going to make it if you win out, but you're going to, no matter what, kind of squeak in maybe, and you're not going to win jack, especially if you face an SEC team or if you face Ohio State or if you face an Oregon. Heck, I think even if you face Indiana, you're going to get a pat on the behind and you're going to be gone. And it's going to be the same takeaway we've had from Penn State for years. Oh, it was a good year. Yeah, sure, man. It could have been better, but it was good. James is really going to get him next year. There shouldn't be a next year. Can that guy. Also, I mentioned Indiana. They're number 8 in the country. And I feel that I owe someone, a very sweet, special someone, an apology. His name's Kurt. I want to say Cignetti because there's a G in there. It may just be Cignetti. I'll say Cignetti just so I sound smart. Kurt Cignetti, head coach of the Indiana Hoosiers. Hoosiers are number 8. And I did not mention that man last week when I was talking about Coach of the Year. I was talking about Mike Elko. I was talking about Deion Sanders. I was looking at these guys, the Aggies and Buffs. They're both ranked. I was looking at them and I'm like, man, what turnarounds for these programs, you know? And I was talking about, yeah, they're probably two of the biggest names in the Coach of the Year running right now. And then somewhere later on down the line, I remembered, quite shockingly, that Indiana football exists. And not only do they exist, they are ranked significantly higher than A&M in Colorado, and they are unbeaten. And they just showed up again, mind you. I saw Indiana going to 4-4 Michigan State, and I got scared. I'm like, hey, man, that's a trap game. Indiana was down in a 10-0 hole, and I'm like, oh, no. Their luck ran out. The Cinderella story is done. And Indiana proceeded to score 47 straight points. Win that game by almost 40. Shut down the Spartans in East Lansing to continue winning. That is phenomenal. Every time you think, oh, this team might give them a scare, or, ooh, they're struggling a bit, any time you think that, they prove you wrong. And they prove you wrong hard. Against Nebraska, 56-7. Against Michigan State, 47-10. Complete beatdowns. Sonetti, this should go without saying, but I'm just saying this because I should have said it a week ago. Sonetti is the coach of the year front runner. And I think, honestly, we're beyond front runner. I think we are beyond that term. I think it's more of he's the future coach of the year winner. He's the coach of the year elect. 'Tis the season for that kind of verbiage. He's won it. It's just a matter of it being made official. I firmly believe that. Sure, Colorado, them doing as good as they are is rare. Texas A&M, they're looking like they're trying to make a push for the SEC title and make the playoff in Elko's first season. That's great. But historically, Indiana is one of the worst football programs I've ever seen. Historically, they are terrible. It was a punishment from the man upstairs. It is as if Indiana basketball, Bob Knight, sold his soul at the expense of the football program for their basketball to be good. That is how terrible the football program is. You could write a horror movie about it. That is their historical footprint. So to see them 9-0 is phenomenal. So Kurt Cignetti, he's won Coach of the Year. I think he's essentially locked it up, even if he loses out. Alrighty, we'll head into Floridian representation, but first I want to remind you that this podcast is the College Try Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Price, of course, brought to you by ESPN Pensacola. You can listen to them on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on our ESPN Pensacola mobile app. And of course, you can find this podcast and others like it and previous episodes from them on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. Alrighty, looking at Floridian representation here. Let's just summarize this the best we can. Miami pulled away from Duke in yet another high-scoring affair, 53-31. That game was a lot closer than that score implies. The Canes were down by double digits in the third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, it was like an eight-point game. So, hey, good win, but you're still rather fake. I still don't buy you as a contender. They now travel to an unpredictable Georgia Tech. Then we've got Florida giving Georgia quite the scare, but with the help of some more QB issues, the Dogs pulled away late, just like I said they would. Man, I feel so bad for Florida. You know, when we looked at this team, when we watched them come into this season, we thought, oh my goodness, they're going to get maraudered. It's just a matter of by whom. So to see them look more like a team that's good and has just gotten a bad hand with the quarterback problems and all that, It's a shame. It really is. I think Florida is such a tough team. And I think Napier is still, with these losses, he's proving why he should keep his job. Speaking of these tough teams that they have to face, they have no time to recuperate from the Georgia loss before heading into Austin to take on Texas. South Florida beat up on FAU just as I was ready to give up on the Bulls. They now have the opportunity to kick the Navy midshipmen while they're down and establish a winning record. They're currently 4-4 on the year. UCF absolutely obliterated Arizona 56-12 to put an end to their five-game loss streak. Now it's time to face 6-2 Arizona State on the road. That's a bit bigger of a beast. But an upset there would completely revive tonight's momentum. I firmly believe that. And that would get their record out of the red. They're currently 4-5. And man, speaking of records in the red, FSU, let's summarize here. They just lost to Mack Brown for the first time ever. They just finished 1-7 in ACC play for the first time ever. They just clinched their most losses in a season in decades, and that's assuming they went out. And by the way, they won't. And they scored their least amount of points in a game this year. They lost 35-11 at home to the Tar Heels. Their trip to Notre Dame is expected to end in yet another disaster. And especially at this point, why wouldn't it? We'll get to just how bad of a disaster I think it'll be in just a moment. But wow. Florida State, I said earlier this season, we got to start considering the chances of them going 2-10. And I don't think it's a chance. Similarly to Cinetti winning Coach of the Year, I think it's bound to happen. And UWF, oh, wow, you want to talk about two different seasons here. You want to talk about two different tales of 2024. UWF got its largest win in program history against Erskine. They won 70-0. When I took the Argos 55-3 last week, I thought, you know what? Maybe that's a little bit conservative. But I was trying to be like in somewhat a realm of possibility. You already lost 73-0 to Valdosta State. What are the chances you get shut out in a 70-point decimation twice? What are the odds that that happens? And it did. UWF, they now host a hit-or-miss North Greenville, and they have understandable losses. They lost close to Valdosta State. That was like an 8-point game. They lost to the Citadel. That's a D1 school. So North Greenville, kind of difficult. They're kind of hard to predict. And they host them for Senior Day right before heading to rival Valdosta State. So UWF has a trap game and a half on the horizon. Looking at some score predictions here, I got UWF, in spite of that, beating North Greenville. Didn't keep that suspense for too long, did I? UWF, I got them winning kind of by a weird score here, 33-24. Miami and Georgia Tech, I think Miami maybe has another late pull away. Game's kind of competitive for a good portion there, and then Miami just kind of wakes up, and we kind of see the skill gap between the players start to rise. I got Miami beating the Yellow Jackets 41-21, but it probably won't feel that impressive. I got Texas beating Florida 35-17, a convincing loss, a heartbreaking loss for the Gators, but I think it's one that it's not some total embarrassment. I think this is a matter of Florida's a physical team. Their talent is good. They're better coached than we thought. They're going to try to fight, and once again, it's just going to be another matter of the better talent coming to play and rising up as the game progresses. South Florida and Navy, as I said, I was talking about South Florida. They have the chance to kick Navy while they're down. Navy got humiliated by Notre Dame, lost by double digits to Rice. All the Navy hype is dead. And South Florida hosts them. I've got it being a home upset. Give me the Bulls 30-26. Arizona State, UCF, this is a big opportunity for them to go on the road, get a big dub. But you're not going to live up to the hype. I've got you losing 34-24. Not some blowout, not some embarrassment, but you decimated Arizona. You're going to start feeling like, all right, we got a little something here. And then you're just going to get humbled because Arizona State's a darn good team this year, and you got to give them credit for that. Notre Dame, speaking of darn good teams, they're hosting a team that darn good isn't. And it's Florida State. 37-13 is my prediction. What's crazy is that as of tonight, that score prediction still implies that I've got Florida State covering the spread. I've still got Florida State keeping this game closer than the spread currently implies. That is sad. Other national games here. None that really tipped the scale too much. There's a couple of big hitters, but that's about it. Georgia and Ole Miss, that's number 3 at number 16. I've got Georgia going on the road and winning this game close, 27-20. I think this is one of those games where Georgia kind of proves their Bama status. I feel that we look at Georgia and are like, oh man, they're just struggling too much. And the committee has implied that. But I think that Bama's done that in the past. And we always saw them show up, you know? I always thought Obama's done this year, and they would always show up for the big moments against the big dogs. I think Georgia is going to prove that they are that way. They're going to catch us all lacking because we're all thinking about counting them out. They're going to prove us wrong. And also, Ole Miss is the Penn State of the SEC. They never show up for the big games. They never get over the hump. So give me Georgia on the road, 27-20. And then I got LSU hosting Alabama. Just mentioned them a moment ago. This is a tough one. Loser of this game essentially has their playoff chances slaughtered. They've both got two losses. I'm sorry. I know it's the SEC, and I know that the SEC is looking deep and has a lot of parity this year. I just don't see a 3-loss team getting in. I just don't see that happening. Whoever loses this game is done. And I've got that team being Alabama. I think we are going to be once again reminded that this is not the same Alabama we thought it was. LSU at home, Death Valley is so brutal. They're going to be coming to play for this game. Both teams coming off of byes. I think this is just too much for this Bama team. If this were Nick Saban's Bama, maybe I'd give him a bit more of a shot. But I look at this team and what they've done this year and just how flighty they've been. I think they're going to kind of psych themselves out with that win over Missouri. And that, you know, they got the bye week and they're feeling, ooh, they're feeling good. They're feeling cocky. You know, yeah, we got this. They're going to go into LSU and they're going to realize, you know what? The stage is a bit too big. The lights are a bit too bright. The team's a bit too tough. And I think you lose your third game of the season and effectively eliminate yourself from playoff contention. Now, upset alert. Did I give the score? 31-23 if I didn't. LSU, 31-23 over Alabama. Alrighty, upset alerts here. I got three. Iowa State, they're number 17. They go to Kansas. What did I say about Iowa State? Their resume was weak. They were going to get exposed by Texas Tech. That's exactly what happened. Iowa State now on the road. Kansas, 2-6. But they're better coached. We know they are. Lance Leopold has proven himself as a great coach. Kansas has been disappointing, but that does not mean they are completely incompetent. They gave Kansas State a scare, I believe. They're at home looking to kick Iowa State while they're down. It's not some huge pick thanks to the Cyclones getting officially exposed, but they're now going back on the road, and it's nonetheless a 7-1, battling a 2-6. So when you look at the record disparity, it's still kind of bold. I'm not saying Jayhawks are going to win, but I would not be surprised if they kept it close. I will say Iowa State wins close. I'll leave it at that. Number 25, Army at North Texas. I know. I want to believe the story, but I fear the committee's right. I fear that Army's going to kind of trip up here. They're unbeaten. They're crawling up the ranks. They're looking ahead to a bye week and a trip to Notre Dame. All of that's on their mind. Meanwhile, North Texas, they're trying to ruin it. And North Texas is at home. They're 5-3. They're trying to make a bowl berth. They're trying to make themselves known. It's just a bit too much. I don't think Army loses. Again, I don't think they do. But I think they validate the committee's concerns. I think they prove why they're just a little guy and why they're just a cute story. I think they prove that against North Texas. But I do wish them the best. I do hope they win, and I think they will. And then we've got this one, man. This is a rivalry I followed for years. It is one of the most hate-filled rivalries, and as a result, it's considered one of the most underrated rivalries in college football. It's called the Holy War. Number 9, BYU travels to Utah. The Utes. I talked about Kansas being disappointing. The Utes are 4-4. Coming into the season, I thought Kansas and Utah were... I thought they were some of the favorites. I thought they were the two favorites to win the Big 12 coming into the season. And they are combined, 6-10? It's terrible. The Utes are 4-4. They're off a bye. They've got nothing more to bring to the 2024 table other than derailing a BYU team, getting a home upset over their hated rivals. I feel like Utah is going to be ready to play for that. I really do. And it's not like BYU won't. I think BYU is a tough team. That for years, they went years without beating Utah. They are historically inferior to Utah in their head-to-head matchups. But I don't know. I think BYU, I will give, man, I don't know. I typically don't take outright upsets here in the upset alert segment. I think I may. I will take Utah to beat BYU. I'll take them to do it. In Salt Lake City, yeah, I got to take the Utes there. 31-28, something like that. You've been listening to the College Tribe podcast every week, right now, every Wednesday. Right here on ESPN Pensacola. You can listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM on our ESPN Pensacola mobile app. You can also find this podcast and others like it on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. I'm Austin Price. We'll see you next week. Good night.